Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, June 26, 2015. An IGAD official says a general working for Riek Machar is forcefully recruiting children earlier this month.
500 up to 1,000 youth were forcefully recruited by Major General Johnson Ohlone's forces, and that at least 70 were children between the age of 13 to 17 years old.
And warring party delegates prepare for more talks to reunify the SPLM party. But one analyst says South Sudanese politicians are selfish.
What we have, I guess, in South Sudan is we have a professional politicians who tend to look after themselves, and they put their interests before the interests of their own people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Regional bloc IGAD says it has credible evidence that Major General Johnson Ohlone, who recently switched his alliance from the government to Riek Machar's rebels, forcefully recruited up to 1,000 children aged between 13 to 17. Officials say the recruitment occurred earlier this month during house-to-house searches in villages near the Upper Nile State capital, Malakal. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
IGAD's monitoring and verification team says its officials in Malakal received reports that Major General Johnson Ohlone was recruiting children under the age of 18 to join his Shilluk militia in the areas of Kodok and Wau Shilluk Payams. Mohamed Amin Mustafa El Tinai is deputy chairman of IGAD's Joint Technical Committee.
This recruitment effort that was investigated occurred between 7 to 9 June and revealed that 500 up to 1,000 youth were forcibly recruited by Major General Johnson Ohlone's forces, and that at least 70 were children between the age of 13 to 17 years old. Of course, the numbers are likely to be higher, and this is only one investigation into one recruitment effort.
Mustafa says there is strong evidence supporting the accusation that Ohlone's men forced children to become child soldiers.
As you know, we have the IGAD monitoring and verification teams, and we have a team in Malakal. They interviewed people who personally witnessed this forced house-to-house recruitment, and additionally, they met with UN agencies whose local contacts in the village of Wau Shilluk and Kodok provided information concerning this recruitment effort.
Mustafa says the children were taken to a training camp west of Wau Shilluk. But since the militia forces are mobile, the child recruits could have been moved to many other locations. It's not the first time Ohlone is accused of forcing children into his militia. In March, when Ohlone was aligned with government forces, IGAD and the UN Children's Agency UNICEF said Ohlone recruited children in Upper Nile State. According to Mustafa, IGAD has evidence that in mid-February, Ohlone's group conscripted about 90 child soldiers through house-to-house abductions. He says some of the children were abducted from a school in Wau Shilluk Payam. Mustafa says any soldiers or military leaders who order the recruitment of children are breaking the law.
Recruiting and using children under the age of 18 to fight or to associate within armed forces in any way is a violation of cessation of hostilities and South Sudanese law, as well as a grave breach of international humanitarian law.
Mustafa urged IGAD's envoys to discuss such violations with the warring parties and demand the immediate release of children. He also called on the government to do more to protect South Sudanese children.
The South Sudanese government has the duty to protect security to its citizens, including children. It is therefore the responsibility of the government to investigate the issue of recruitment of child soldiers and punish their perpetrators.
Mustafa also expressed concern about the recent upstick in fighting in Unity and Upper Nile states, where security conditions have deteriorated. He is calling on both sides to end the conflict and put the well-being of their people first. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Still in Juba, delegations of the SPLM in government and SPLM in opposition are headed to Arusha today to discuss the implementation of an already signed agreement to reunify the ruling party. Officials say the delegations will also prepare for an upcoming heads of state summit where President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will meet face to face. For VOA News, Charlton Doki also has that report from Juba.
Acting SPLM spokesperson Kor Paul Akordit is leading the government's five-member delegation to the talks.
We are going to Arusha to engage the SPLM in opposition, which has signed the Arusha Reunification Agreement. And so far, they've backtracked from that agreement, and they've not been serious with its implementation. So the co-guarantors have invited us, the SPLM leadership and the SPLM in opposition, for this engagement.
Akordit says he understands the SPLM in opposition is arriving later tonight. He expressed hope that these talks, which include the former detainees that have been welcomed back into the party, will finally enable the factions of SPLM to narrow their differences and eventually lead to a peaceful end to the more than 18-month-long conflict.
This round of talks in Arusha will be bilateral because the former detainees are now dissolved and they are part of us after joining us. So they are no longer an entity. So it will be direct talks between the SPLM and the SPLM in opposition. And we hope that the outstanding issues, if there are issues that made the SPLM in opposition not to come on board, we hope to address them so that peace prevails in this country.
Akordit says the two delegations will also prepare the ground for a heads of state summit in which both President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar are expected to attend.
There are other consultations that are going on in the region also. Kenya, in person of President Uhuru Kenyatta, witnessed the signing of Arusha Agreement. And he is also endeavoring to bring President Salva and Riek Machar together to reinforce the Arusha Agreement and to ensure that Riek comply with the provision of Arusha Agreement.
According to reports in the Kenyan media, President Kenyatta met Machar in Nairobi on Wednesday. Yesterday, the Kenyan leader met the former detainees, led by the just reinstated SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum, to discuss the peace process. Akordit says the Arusha peace process has overtaken the IGAD-led talks in Addis Ababa because there has been progress in that the former detainees have been welcomed back into the government. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Not everyone thinks the Arusha talks resulted into a landmark agreement. Amer Idris is a respected scholar on Africa. Yesterday, Idris released a statement saying South Sudan's leaders are wrong to focus their attention on reunifying the SPLM. He says they should instead be trying to restore peace so that the suffering of the people ends. Karen Zaivogo spoke with Idris, who is from South Sudan, about what he thinks is the way forward for the country.
If we look at what the political leaders now are trying to do, they're trying to address their internal differences. And that is, to me, it does not really address the underlying causes of the problems, which I guess manifested in a political crisis, a humanitarian crisis, and a security crisis. So these three issues is, in my view, are very important to move forward and finding a lasting peace for South Sudan. So, and also, I think, if we accept the line of thinking that any quest for lasting peace in South Sudan has to address these three components, we recognize also the urgency of the plights of hundreds of thousands of people of South Sudan who continue to live in IDP's camps. And it seems to me is utterly irresponsible to waste precious times that it could be diverted to resolve the underlying causes of the problems, which I guess in turn allow people of South Sudan to chart out a bright future for themselves and for their children.
Towards the end of your statement, you say South Sudan can't be saved by professional politicians who lack the needed virtues of statesmanship. Are you saying that the leaders of South Sudan are focusing too much on themselves and not enough on the people and the people who really need their help?
Absolutely true. So I do make a distinction between politician and statements. So the politician is always, they're trying to speak the language of the people who are in the political positions. The statesman is someone who is trying to find solutions to a crisis by first identifying visions and implements that visions in a way that enables his own people or her own people to find a bright future for the entire society. So what we have, I guess, in South Sudan is we have a professional politicians who tend to look after themselves, and they put their interests before the interests of their own people. And that is, to me, is very problematic, and it's manifested. It's very clear to me as last week when we, all of us, I guess, witnessed the returns of the self-named former political detainees to Juba without actually identifying what they want to do in order to save the people of South Sudan from their own misery.
So now the all the factions of the SPLM, they're headed to Arusha to discuss reunification. What should they be doing instead of going to Arusha and talking again about reunifying the party?
Peace cannot be cultivated in Arusha, in my view. So sustainable peace, in my view, has to come from a comprehensive peace agreement is brokered by the IGAD Plus. And I do understand that the IGAD Plus now circulated documents, or they're planning to circulate detailed documents that address the three major components of the crisis in South Sudan. And I think that it would be wise for all those political leaders to spend time looking at this detailed document, which, in my view, charts out a clear way to address the underlying causes of the problem. So that is, to me, is preferable, and I think it's advisable too, as I mentioned, for all the political parties, is to take the IGAD Plus detailed document seriously and try to figure out how they could move forward.
That was Amir Idris, the chair of the Department of African and African American Studies at Fordham University in New York. He was speaking with Karen Zaivogo earlier today. Western Bahr al-Ghazal of state officials have formed a task force to create a massive awareness campaign about cholera following the outbreak declared in Juba earlier this week. Although no cases have been reported in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state this year, officials say prevention efforts are necessary to protect the public. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau.
South Sudan Ministry of Health officials said on Tuesday that 19 people have died and there are more than 100 hospital-confirmed cases of cholera in Juba. The news prompted Western Bahr al-Ghazal State Health Ministry officials to go on the offensive. Health authorities say a special ward has been set up at Wau Teaching Hospital, ready to admit any patient exhibiting cholera-like symptoms. Temporary shelters for cholera patients have also been set up. Dr. Isaac Leto Hassan, Western Bahr al-Ghazal's health minister, told reporters Thursday that even though his state has no reported cases of cholera so far this year, a widespread public education campaign about safe drinking water and personal hygiene is needed to minimize the risk of a similar outbreak.
Before preparing food and before breastfeeding the baby, women should wash their hands, and everyone should wash their hands after visiting the latrine so that we don't carry the bacteria. This is also applicable to the restaurants and public places where there should be proper hygiene. In addition, all our food should be well cooked, and raw fruits and vegetables for salads need proper washing and care.
Hassan says all public drinking water sources, as well as water containers for home use, must be kept clean. And he says precautions should be taken to ensure that wells are kept clean.
all wells should be built up because this is the rain season, and you find some wells in the residential areas where the water is contaminated and flowing inside. We are going to distribute chlorine tablets for water treatment, yet I want to stress that any drinking water should be boiled, then cooled and stored in covered containers.
Hassan says the Ministry of Health, Water, Sanitation and Hygiene Division will distribute chlorine to Western Bahal Ghazal families for drinking water treatment. Isaac Imerio, the state's Water and Sanitation Hygiene Director, says his staff has already started distributing soap to about 400 IDPs in the UNMISS Protection of Civilian Site in Wau. He says this is critically important due to overcrowding.
We are going to chlorinate around 105 open dug wells, which people are getting water from it. This process will start hopefully next week. The preparation already started on that. And then next things which we are also planning to do is to start doing hygiene awareness campaign in the IDP's camp.
Emilio says they are also erecting posters to tell people about the importance of using clean or boiled water. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in Wau.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Who won the Monut Ball tournament in South Sudan? Find out when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what does your community need most that they can come together and accomplish?
We find that people in the villages have made groups whereby they do plant trees. And then if you look at the issue of HIV and AIDS, there are so many people that are making so many groups, like how to help those that are affected.
Self-entrepreneur skills, like, okay, they need more entrepreneur skills. And I think they'll need to focus more on doing small income generating activities that can be carried out.
The community need peace. That's the priority. Whenever a community have peace and love, they can accomplish everything and challenges they have.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Black Stars Basketball Club has beaten three other South Sudanese teams to win the inaugural Monut Ball tournament. But there was more than a sense of sportsmanship and jubilation in the air in Juba when the week-long tournament wrapped up yesterday. Mungome Dave's Rakarinj attended some of the games and sent us this report.
Businessman James Peter is not a Black Stars supporter. In fact, he supports Nimula Talata, the team that finished last in the tournament. But like the thousands of other basketball fans who packed the open-air stadium in Juba to watch the games, Peter realizes that there was a bigger message to take away from this inaugural tournament in memory of South Sudan basketball legend Manute Ball.
This is a good day today. The people of the South Sudan today, all of us here, from other tribes, from the old tribes of South Sudan, to join the basketball. This is a good work, yeah.
Nicola Ball is Manute Ball's cousin. He agrees with Peter that the tournament had a broader message than just playing ball.
The theme of this tournament is that sport can unite us. And under that theme, basketball is one of the most popular sports in South Sudan. If you look around today, these spectators are from all the races of South Sudan. And that is what it means, bringing them together to share something that they love, which is basketball.
Nicola Ball's wife, Achui Chol, was the lead organizer of the tournament. She brought medals and basketball-shaped trophy from the United States for the players. She also put up 5,000 South Sudanese pounds of her own money for the winning team, which ended up being the Black Stars. Cho says the Minister of Youth and Sports, Nadia Arop Dudi, presented the players with certificates after yesterday's final. Cho says she and the rest of the organizing team are planning for the tournament to become an annual event.
This will continue. It's going to be like every year on the 19th of June, the time of his death. It has been marked now as Manut Bol Day. So every year on the same time, at the same day, it will take place in South Sudan. But we don't know at the moment because of the civil war. We are waiting for the peace. But if the peace happen really, it might be in a different state next year.
That would please 14-year-old Fiona Jasmine. She says she was inspired by the Black Stars' skills.
Yeah, they are playing well, and their style also. I like it. Yeah, I want to be like them. That is my dream.
Nicola Ball says making the dreams of young fans like Jasmine come true is one of the driving forces behind the tournament.
We are going to build more courts because we think South Sudan in years to come will be a powerhouse for basketball. So we hope that we have a chance to produce more Manut Bol. And that's why we want the people to forget all these things and come together, live in peace and think of our development in sports and all the sectors of the life.
Charles says that getting South Sudanese to unite through basketball was Manut Bol's dream.
Manut got a mission. His dream was basketball, his education in the country. He wanted better life, better country, better future for the youth of South Sudan and the community of South Sudan in large.
Organizers say they plan to invite teams from all 10 South Sudanese states for next year's tournament. They are also trying to convince teams from other countries and maybe even some of Manut Bol's former NBA teammates to make the trip to South Sudan to take part in future tournaments to remember Manut Bol, one of South Sudan's giants on and off the court. For VOA News, Ajam Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj.
Charles Lamodong in Juba and Karen Zaivog in Washington contributed to that report. In Australia, hundreds of university students and professionals are volunteering every week to help immigrant children in Australia perform well in school and integrate into Australian communities. South Sudanese children living in Australia say the volunteers help them feel at home. The South Sudanese Australian Integrated Learning Program, or SEAL, is a non-profit organization that provides free English language tutoring for Sudanese children and teenagers in primary and secondary schools. The programs operate on Saturdays morning at campuses in Melbourne, Sydney and Perth. Megan Renwald is a university student who manages the SEAL program in Melbourne. She says the program offers opportunity to students from immigrant communities who have difficulties adjusting to the Australian system of education. Winwald says it's been a rewarding experience.
We get a lot out of volunteering at SAIL. Like, it's just a good thing to do, and you know in your heart that you're making a real, actual difference. And we derive a lot of joy, I think, from volunteering with the program.
SEAL program cater for both young and old immigrants having trouble communicating in English. 65-year-old Ibrahim Suleiman, who is from Sudan's Darfur region, says the program has helped him immensely. After I came here, they put us in schools, and bit by bit we have begun to understand. But if something is very important, they bring translators to help us, he says. But in other simple matters, he says he can communicate with them in English. Before, they used to depend on translators, but now he can do most transactions without the help of translators. 12-year-old Linda Levy, who hails from Western Bahr al-Ghazal State, says SEAL volunteers help her perform better in school.
I come here every Saturday. I bring my homework. I come, I have a tutor, and he helps me with my homework.
Dr. Seka, a medical professional who volunteers at the SEAL program, says teaching English is one of our hobbies.
One of my friends told me about SEAL, and I thought it would be a good opportunity to be involved in the community as well. I live around here, so I know that there's a big community of migrants from the various African nations. So I thought it would be a nice way for me to tutor, meet part of the community that I live in as well.
Achol Arok is 11 years old and is very thankful for the program.
I've been at SAIL since 2012, and I really enjoy doing SAIL because I get to learn more, and it's really fun.
SAIL offers tutoring to approximately 550 members of the Sudanese and South Sudanese community living in Australia, and has a volunteer staff of about 500 people, most of them tutors in Melbourne, Sydney and Perth. Still in Australia, a South Sudanese immigrant who has taken the plunge into music industry says he's pleased to see his songs catching up on in Australia. I visited Melbourne recently and sat down with this young musician who has a message for the leaders of South Sudan.
My name is Roy Cott. I'm 18 years old. I'm studying at Victoria University. I'm studying a liberal arts, which is based on a bit of communication, politics, and a lot of essay writing.
Where are you from specifically in South Sudan?
I was born in Khartoum.
Where is home in South Sudan?
Home in South Sudan is in...
Yeah, let's skip that. We will get to that.
Yeah, Awil. I was born... home is in Awil.
In northern Bahr el-Ghazal?
Yes.
Good. Tell me a little bit about your music. What kind of songs do you sing about?
Our music is based on social change and the way we could support young people to change their ways of life.
And have you recorded any album?
My first album was released 2014, June 19, and that was called Hear Me Roar. Those tracks included Papa, which was a song about my dad. Yeah.
For us to move countries, everything was done underground, cause daddy had a gun. Mama wanted to leave, so we're on the run. Daddy right behind us.
Why did you decide to sing about your dad? Other people sing about their girlfriends, they sing about life. Why did you choose to sing about your dad?
What really inspired me to get that song out there and write it was my sister. Her name is Ayel. We went to a camp where people got to share their stories. She decided to share a story about our dad and how life was. And when I heard that, because that was the first time I heard it, that inspired me. I decided to go home and write a song about it.
Are you planning to record more songs? Are there anything in the works that you want to share with us?
Actually finished recording a song yesterday, which is called White Man, Black Man.
That sounds more interesting. Yeah. What is all about that song?
It's about what's actually going on, the killing, the violence, racism. I was inspired to write that song. I was watching the news and all these killings that started to happen again, like what happened with the church in, forgot the name of the place, but
chasing dreams, the world still mad at me. That's just reality. Go between insanity. Devil trying to take the man in me, making me my own enemy. Ain't trying to get a felony. Brothers getting shot. Ain't no love here. Living in fear. So much pain when you see your mind drop a tear. Tell me, Lord, that you're real. Can you save us here? Is it all too late? Make I made a mistake. Government manipulate.
That kind of inspired me. And what will happen to Mike Brown and all those young people that were killed, the innocent, killed for no reason, kind of led to the song. So that's why I called it White Man, Black Man.
If you have one message that you would want to pass to the leaders of your country, mm-hmm. South Sudan, what would that message be?
Think of your actions. Look at your people, what you're doing to them. If you want your country to grow, then you gotta also think about your people instead of just being so selfish.
Them crying, them fighting, and them gossiping, a lot of snitching. That's Roy Cott, a South Sudanese university student whose music is becoming popular in Australia. He was speaking with me in Melbourne last week, and that brings us to the end of this edition of South Sudan in Focus for this week. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Remember to tune in again next week.
from 1991 is back again. No, 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 no. What's wrong in South Sudan? What's wrong in South Sudan? It's like we were born to struggle, struggle. No.